They could be sailing round the coast, watching whales, making toast, surveying coral reefs, or picking citrus. Driving, listening, nodding, smiling, net phoning, and mobiling, dialing up Australia on Sunday morning. Greg is prawning off Mackay. He's shipped ashore and wonders why imported prawns will put him out of business. Bikers, barristers, marine biologists, joggers, journos, jam dropologists, connecting up Australians on Sunday morning.
Yeah, Macca in the morning. I live in a place above Tamworth, a little place called Moonbi. I'm caretaking a property of 470 acres of undulating virgin bush with 900 metres above sea level. The view south is absolutely phenomenal towards Tamworth, and we've got fruit trees on the property under netting that keeps the flying foxes and the sand flies away. We've got this big steel loop over the top, and it just puts some nets over it, and it protects it. Don't need spraying or anything, and we've got some beautiful pears and apples coming on at the moment, all organic. No sprays required.
When's pear season? Is it now? Is it?
January right through to February, March. Yeah, it's all on the end now. We've got the last of them just on the trees where we start to pick.
And are these a Burybosch or Williams or what?
Burybosch, the Pacman and the Josephine. Packham's. Some bigger than your fist, some beautiful large pears. And when they're ripe and they're soft, and you can put a straw in them and drink.
Stop it.
The kitchen's spotless in Cundabung, and if your mother hasn't rung, she's probably listening to Macca on a Sunday morning. She waits all week for Macca on a Sunday morning.
Good morning, welcome to the program. Lots of lovely things today, as usual. We've been talking about Lake Eyre this morning, and Robbo just rang from Bendigo telling us about Lake Eyre and how the French who wanted to ride across. When was it, Kel? What year was it, did he say? But they wanted to ride across Lake Eyre, and of course there was... they wanted to drive across there, but they wanted to get out to the salt, but the salt was only a couple of inches thick, and yet back in 63 it was dry as, and Donald Campbell set the land speed record there. But it's a very dangerous place, full of water or not full of water, Lake Eyre. It's a big area, big area. Anyway, Rick says, Ian, we've been talking about the weather because Sydney got lashed and around the place, Richmond, Camden, all over the place, got lashed with lots of rains, and it's raining, like Linda rang from Capalabar, and it's raining up there. Daylight saving has ended, if you wonder why you're up at 8 o'clock when it's only 7 o'clock. that's why. That's for those states who have daylight saving. For the rest of us, yeah, as you were. Rick says, Ian, David Burton is predicting a stroke forecasting 5 very wet years to 2029. Who's David Burton when he's home, as my mum used to say? I'd say, Mum, so-and-so says, and she'd say, who's Tom Smith when he's home, if you know what I mean. He's very accurate forecast for the 2018-19 drought 10 years ahead. He uses Inigo Jones's forecasting methods. There you go. All right. Yep. Who knows? Wither the weather. It'll be a very hard gig trying to second guess the weather. I've been raising money for UNICEF, says Colin Windsor, through their workout for water, Les Mills initiative to assist children everywhere that cannot access drinkable water. Donations can be made until the 28th of April, says Dr. Colin Windsor. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, I think, didn't I? Look, our number this morning is 1300 700 222. While if I live, and I've got a whole lot. One of my friends in Perth sent me this little missive. Gwen, she says, may you always have love to share, cash to spare, tyres with air, and friends who care. Yeah, would we? We would wish. We would wish. And welcome to our listeners in Nuku'alofa this morning. I'm just going through a whole. We were talking about STEM, and Catherine says you were talking about STEM on last week. Here's a quote about science. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and maths, which is the buzzword. You either want to do it or you don't, you know. As I've always said, I didn't particularly like maths. I struggled through, but I think it's important to have to do subjects, not all the time, but to do subjects. Like maths is important, but also to do something that you struggle at. You can't always do things that you like to do and it's easy and whatever. So I think in some ways that's what you remember at school. Oh, I got a double maths today. I used to go and get lollies for the double maths. Anyway, science is like magic, only real, says Catherine. I gave this quote on a badge to my sister at Christmas. She's a doctor of computer science in Brisbane. Says Catherine Wilde. She's a medical doctor from Armidale. Thank you, Catherine. Science is like magic, only real. I remember when I was a little kid, about the same age as Cameron, who's wandering around here this morning. He's about 12. And my dad took me to Sydney Uni, where he worked, and there was an open day on, and there was a chemist there. I think his name was Mr. Bro, and he was doing things, and he had this experiment, and he put stuff in stuff, and then all of a sudden it went, and this big black carbon cloud sort of floated up, and I went, wow, science is amazing, isn't it? That's why I used to like chemistry and physics to a certain extent, but chemistry with chemicals, like, as I've always said, we used to play with mercury on the table. You'd have it in the science lab, you have mercury, and we'd tip a little bit and roll it and go into little balls, and it's amazing. It's an amazing substance, isn't it, mercury? And poisonous, of course, but there you go. Our number's 1300 700 222, wherever you are. Love to talk to you. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, g'day, Macca. It's Michael Smith. How are you?
Michael Smith, the aviator.
Indeed. And
Michael, tell people what you're doing.
So this year is the 100th anniversary since the first flight around Australia. Mm. And yesterday was the actual 100th anniversary of them departing Point Cook RAF base.
Mm.
And I'm retracing the trip over the same 44 days that they did, visiting all of the same places. And subject to weather, sticking to the same schedule as well.
So you took off what, from Melbourne yesterday?
Yeah, Point Cook yesterday, mid-morning, and had a nice little collection of people there. The RAF rolled out a few old planes and it was a great send-off. And so, the plan was – sorry, you go.
No, I was going to say, just paint a picture. So you're doing – this is 100 years since the – who did the original voyage around Australia in a seaplane?
Oh, so it was Goebel and McIntyre, who were two officers in the Royal Australian Air Force, which was fairly new at that stage. And they, in looking at how to do this trip, I mean, the problem was there weren't actually airports around the country. So they realised they needed to take a seaplane. And they landed on little rivers and lakes all around the country until they got around to sort of areas like Broome, where they had to land on the open ocean to come into shore to refuel. But before they even took off in the plane, it took 7 months of logistics of getting barrels of fuel delivered to beaches around the country so that the supplies were there for them.
It's, wow.
An incredible, incredible feat. And
so this was 1924?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So, and have you had to do the same sort of things? No.
Well, no, look, that's part of what I want to look at is, you know, sort of tell the story of their trip, but look at where, you know, how things have changed in 100 years. And as part of them doing that trip was partly a survey trip. So they actually worked out where it would be good to build a bunch of airports, and they started getting built very soon after because governments pulled up their socks and got on with things back then. And so that was, sorry.
That's all right.
Maybe that.
Go for it.
So they... Look, it was a huge, huge news when they did it. People were sort of following it because it was such a huge deal that, I mean, we managed to fly from England to Australia in 1919, and it took five more years to fly around Australia because the northwest of Australia was more remote than flying between India and Jakarta. I mean, that's just amazing. So, look, they did a fantastic job. They had a few mechanical issues along the way, as you'd expect from an engine that was 100, you know, over 100 years ago.
So what sort of plane did they – what was the plane they flew?
It's called a Fairey Mark III. It was a single-engine plane, quite a large plane for a single engine, biplane, and it had and they took off the wheels and put floats on it. And quite unusual. A lot of people see, especially if you're in Sydney, you see the Sydney seaplanes flying out of Rose Bay, you know, which are the planes on two floats. But they actually had three floats. They took off the two front wheels and had a front, the two floats at the front, and then where the back wheel was, they put another float. And it's they moved on from that idea, you know, soon after. But they were in such a rudimentary plane.
And what are you in?
So I'm in my Sea Bear, which is a twin engine flying boat. So it's sort of more like a Catalina in that the hull of the plane lands on the water, and it's, you know, it's modern, it's comfortable. I mean, you know, we have GPS now, so we don't have to worry about where we are. I mean, these guys twice they had to stop because their compass was malfunctioning. And, you know, their three pieces of navigation equipment were, you know, a compass, a watch, and the speedometer. So it's...
So you took off from Melbourne yesterday. You're in Bairnsdale this morning. Did you run into a lot of weather? Because there's weather about...
Yeah, a huge amount. I in fact, I'm following the beach. So rather than just going in a straight line, I come to Bairnsdale all the time. It's about an hour and 15-minute flight. But it took me 3 hours to get here because I'm following the beach around the country, and at 500 feet, and it's really quite spectacular just to be, and quite committed. When I look at the route that I did yesterday, I mean, when you start following every cove, you're not quite aware of it when you're flying, but when you look at the map at the end of the day of the track, and you go, wow, that really was wriggling away, and you know, but it's good to have that mission. But lots of weather, so I was down under Wilson's Prom. And the weather just started rolling through. So I diverted to Yarram, which is on the coast there, just at the top of Wilson's Prom, and sat it out for a couple of hours, like a lot of people do, sat there looking at apps on phones and iPads and occasionally looking up at the horizon to go, yeah, actually, it's still bad.
Goble and McIntyre didn't have iPads, mate.
I know. Haven't we? That's part of the thing. We've come so far. We've got these reliable planes. We've got GPS. We know where we are. We've got all these apps. But the weather's still there.
And the weather's still, yes. It's it just reminds. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Michael Smith. Michael, so you said before they had to, they did their flight, they did logistical things and put drums of fuel here, there, and everywhere. Are you going to the places where they land? Do you know where they landed, or are you just doing the thing as a you know, a commemoration of 100 years?
Look, it's a commemoration, but I've got a small history book's been written about this, and with some notes, I've got every town that they landed at. I've got the dates, and it's my plan to retrace that and faithfully to the dates that they're there, of course, subject to weather. And so things like when they got to Thursday Island, they got stuck there for a week because of weather. So I'm actually going to stay there. I won't get to the next stop for 7 days because I want to retrace that. Luckily, my brother lives up there, so I'll visit him. But then in Carnarvon, right at sort of on one of the most westerly points of Australia, halfway up Western Australia, they were stuck for 10 days. They actually had to get a new engine shipped to them. So I'll be sitting that one out too. But look, on the weather side, I do find it fascinating that in reading their notes from getting up the east coast of Australia, it's almost the identical weather 100 years ago that they were having. Lots of low cloud, having to make diversions. They ended up landing on the Myall River for 2 nights just to sit out the weather. But there also were less rules then. So, you know, yesterday I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's really getting to the point where I can't, you know, keep 500 feet safely. So I'll just go into, you know, go into Yarram and then later went into Bairnsdale. They say the weather was so bad we had to fly at 100 feet above the ocean all the way to Sydney.
Wow. Well, Michael, you keep in touch with us. And,
yeah, I will.
From time to time, it'd be lovely to travel around Australia with you, if you know what I mean, every Sunday. How long will it take you, do you reckon?
It's 44 days.
44 days.
Plan to be back at Point Cook on Sunday the 19th of May. All and right. And if, look, people are keen to see the maps, also there's a bunch of video I'm taking on the way, and if they just go to southernsun.voyage, you'll find all of the links for everything you need there. So,
Michael, in your little sea vein, good on you, mate, and keep in touch, eh?
Okay, great to chat, Macca.
See you, mate, bye. Oh, Dick Smith's on the line. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Good. I'm great, mate.
Wonderful.
An aviator like Michael Smith would be a man after your own heart.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think flying around Australia, I did it once in the helicopter in 1984, and it was just absolutely fantastic. In fact, the distance from Terry Hills right up to Cape York and then around Australia was just about the same distance as from Sydney to London. So it's a long way.
It is a long way. And Michael, you know Michael Smith, of course, don't you?
Yeah, I have very good memory of him. And in fact, it was myself who about 5 years ago saw that the anniversary was coming up. So I wrote to Michael and I said, why don't you recreate it? Because he's our float plane bloke or our seaplane bloke. And he said, what a great idea, I'll do it.
44 days, so that'll be interesting. And as we've all seen with the weather, you never know what's around the corner with the weather, do you, in Australia?
No. No, and fortunately he's going to be on the coast, of course, so no great mountains, but it'll be a fantastic flight. Seeing Australia on the coast right around is incredible.
And he's got a seaplane, but I assume it's one of those seaplanes with wheels on the bottom of the float so he can land on land if he wants to.
Absolutely right. It's amphibious. It'll go on water or on land, so it's quite fantastic.
Yeah, and when you think of Goebel and McIntyre, 1924, and flying had just really started, hadn't it? I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, that of course, was before the famous flight by Smithy in 1928 across the Pacific, before Bert Hinkler in 1928. So that was sort of before any of the great records were started, and quite fantastic.
Dick, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, Macca, I wanted to ring you because I'm quite more concerned about these wind farms, and I've been getting calls from people up near Armidale, and they're all worried. And I got sent a photograph. I'd always thought, I've seen lots of wind farms and wind turbines which are in cleared land, but I always thought if they went into forested land, that would they just sort of stick up through the forest. But I got sent a photograph, and if anyone's listening, just key Kaban Wind Farm, K-A-B-A-N, Wind Farm, into either Google or Google Maps, and it will come up with this wind farm that they're just putting in, and it's just southwest of Cairns. And I think they've got about 12 turbines in at the moment. There's going to be a lot more. And the excavation, the land work they have to do by pulling down trees and putting in roads is just staggering. And what I found out was that some of the parts can weigh up to 30 tons. And of course, the windmill blades are incredibly long. So you can't just put a fire trail into the base. You've almost got to put a highway. And so the amount of excavation earth moving is just staggering.
Well, that's the same thing the bloke told me about his poles and wires and around Ballarat on his potato farm, and putting in the poles and wires, they clear a great space around underneath those. So he was losing, I don't know what it was, you know, hundreds or thousands of acres of his potato farm.
Yeah, and here's the problem. I mean, John Peatfield, I think you've spoken to him, he says they're going to put up around Armidale 1,500 wind turbines, and it'll look like the Ruhr Valley. I mean, you wouldn't want to go there if they're going to do that. And to me, what I'm concerned about is that the CSIRO have never given us one. We just need one page that says, and it would be very simple. It says, look, the amount of energy we use now per day for electricity is so much, and then the amount of energy we use for transport and everything else is so much. That adds up to a total energy usage per day. It'd be so many gigawatt hours. Then what they should say is, now by 2050, we have to go to zero carbon, so our population is going to increase to about 40 million in that time, and then work out how many wind turbines they'd need, how many solar farms they would need. And that simple one-page sheet we've never got from them. And I have a terrible feeling is that it would show so many wind turbines and so many solar farms that everyone's going to say, oh, no way, we couldn't do that. And so if anyone's listening, they might be able to work out. I used to be quite good at maths when I was at school, but I'm sure someone could work out just how many, and also how many batteries. We could say there's the Tesla battery, which cost $90 million in Adelaide. It will run Adelaide for about 7 minutes at peak load. And so what we need is how many batteries, how many wind turbines, and how many solar farms would we need? They could work it out today or tomorrow, and they should be telling us.
And the other thing is, I think people talk about the environment all the time. We have environment ministers. I yep. wonder what environment ministers have to say about all that. They're sort of silent on that. You know, they talk about, yeah. oh yes, we're fixing up the Barrier Reef, or we're doing this, but they don't talk about the look of our country, and even in the cities, where, you know, I think the built environment needs talking about as well. But, you know, we never hear about. I drove up to, where was no. I, Inverell, through Glen Innes, around there, and I was surprised, because I hadn't been there for a while, I suppose, because but surprised at the number of wind farms, and they always put them on the ridges, don't they?
Yeah, and what I'm saying is there's going to be the most incredible damage to the environment by doing this. But let me tell you, mentioning politicians, they're going to put wind farms off Newcastle in the ocean and then off Wollongong. And then someone said to me, why aren't they putting any off Sydney, and where they need the power? And I'm sure it's because the wealthy donors are in Sydney, the wealthy donors to political parties. I can't see any other reason why they wouldn't put it near Sydney.
I can't see why there's not alternatives. I mean, you've been talking about alternatives, but we won't go there. But there are alternatives to wind farms, and I suppose to solar farms too. There's a story on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald today about the solar farms and the amount of land they're covering, and it's endangering. I don't know if it's true or not. It's another story. You've got to read in between the lines. I haven't read much of it. I just saw the headline that endangered species, the land that they live on, is being covered by solar farms. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, they should be telling us what's the total thing. They could work it out now, and I believe they know it. So let's try and get from the CSIRO, look, you're going to need 300,000 wind turbines or whatever it is.
Whatever.
How many batteries? They must be able to work it out now, and that's very important. And by the way, I know I'm not going to mention the N word,
yeah.
but can you imagine if you're up at the New England area and they've said to you, we're going to put 1,500 wind towers in, and then we're going to put another 10,000 hectares of solar farms, or wait for it, you could change over the Earing Power Station. Instead of running from coal, you could run from uranium, and then you wouldn't have any of these things. Now, I know what people up in the New England area would vote for.
Dick, great to talk to you.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks, Macca.
This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and I noted again this week that the story of the shortage of doctors in country towns, indeed right around Australia, has come up again, that more rural applicants should train as doctors, and there'd be more chance that they'd stay in the bush. This is from Derek. Derek says, Ian Finley in the Riverina has had a doctor for over 40 years plus. Arrived from Rockdale, that's a suburb of Sydney, to Finley in 1980. Dr. Sharon to her patients. Population in 1980 was 2,000 for Finley. Over the years, the Finley population has grown. Dr. Sharon Hambly delivered the babies even at 3 a.m. one Christmas morning. A truly dedicated family doctor, says Derek. Every town and suburb needs a Dr. Sharon or two, don't they? Ian, maybe you could do an outside broadcast from Finley. The only 3 a.m. traffic on the Newell is trucks and occasionally Dr. Sharon going to Finley Base Hospital. Best country doctor. Thank you, Derek. From Nick Magnus in Signet and Tassie. Responding to your listener who lamented the unfragrant, homogenous mangoes and lack of Big Red Delicious and Granny Smith's tasty strawberries and the engineering flat peaches for lunchboxes, where has all the good fruit gone? Question mark. I reckon it went overseas anyway. The answer is that the good fruit is in your backyard, literally. The convenience and cheapness of the supermarket fruit has lulled us into a sense of laziness that means we outsource our food production to the mass production farms where the fruit is picked early, cool stored, transported across the country, where we've become used to the perfectly shaped bananas and the ideally proportioned carrots. We have lost the ability to accommodate the full range of fruit sizes and shapes, complete with knobbles, russeted skin, dimples and flecks. We've also come to expect and enjoy avocados and raspberries all year round and no longer have the patience to wait until the fruit is back in season. The answer, says Nick, grow your own. Like my grandparents in wartime Europe, growing their own food got them out of trouble when food supply was common. The amount of food that can be grown in a small suburban plot of a few metres square is phenomenal, needing only a couple of hours' work a week. Some herbs, lettuces and peas, radishes and carrots. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Bordered by an espaliered apple tree not only gives us a supply of delicious food, but keeps us in touch with the cycles of nature. A good antidote to time wasted mind-numbingly scrolling social media and gazing at screens. Set up a plot. Some raised garden beds, maybe? Get some compost and mulch to suppress the weeds and get planting, says Nick from Signet in southern Tassie. It sounds like a good idea, Nick. We're either too lazy or we don't have the time. We're all time poor. From David Gordon, your segment about Matthew Flinders struck a chord with me because it was my five times great-grandfather, Peter Kenny Hibbs, who was at the helm of the Norfolk sloop as master of the vessel for both that first ever circumnavigation of Tasmania, or Van Diemen's Land, and the voyage northward up to the current-day Queensland to map the two bays that Captain James Cook noted, but never entered, Moreton Bay and Hervey Bay. Matthew Flinders named Hibbs Point on Tasmania's west coast after him when they first sighted it from the Norfolk sloop on the evening of the 11th of December 1798. Peter Kenny Hibbs's name remains largely unknown to most Australians, along with that of the other crewmen on the Norfolk sloop on her two historic voyages. John Thistle, Robert Webb, Samuel Ward Flinders, that's Flinders' brother, and an Aboriginal of the Broken Head tribe called Bongaree. Similarly, they get little or no recognition for their part in these respective historic voyages in 1798 and 1799. Over the past few years, says David Gordon, I've been striving to identify exactly who was on board the Norfolk sloop on each of her historic voyages, and with the help of maritime historians from the Australian National Maritime Museum and Norfolk Island specialist historian Cathy Dunn, I remain hopeful that this 225-year-old mystery can finally be solved. Aside from those I've confirmed, I'm convinced that among the core crew of the Norfolk sloop were Peter Kenny Hibbs and five crew, three Scottish sailors and two other sailors, who were at that time, in 1798 and 1799, based on Norfolk Island. Anyway, Macca, like all Australians, I'm really glad Matthew Flinders' unmarked grave was finally found and that he is to be reburied and afforded the degree of respect he is so worthy of. It'll be wonderful for there to be finally a place for Australians to go and pay their respects to him in England, says David Gordon from Claremont in Queensland. This is the All Over News, and this next story is about get out there and enjoy the wide open spaces. It's good for you. Mountaineer, Everest climber, Greg Mortimer has some tips for you. I'm talking to Greg Mortimer. Greg, I pulled you out of the archives last week when we were talking about Everest in the 1990s, and nothing seems to have changed. Still 200 people at climbing of the year and still a lot of deaths.
Yeah, the numbers are going up of people going to Everest every year, and the climbers are getting better and better at doing it. There's just more of them, and still people dying, unfortunately.
Do you ever think of what it was like for Hillary and what it was like back in Hillary's day? We thought, gee, that'll never be done again, or if it very rarely, but it's almost like a Sunday afternoon drive, isn't it now?
I've contemplated that one a lot because of the increase in numbers. You know, there was a photo a few years ago of a queue going up to the top of Everest, and goodness, I think that's one of the most tragic photographs in mountaineering history, unfortunately, to see people queued up to go to the summit. But I take my hat off to anyone who can get there, but there's just too many of them at the moment.
Greg, you've just done a walk. It's nothing like climbing Everest, and yet it's still a wonderful thing to do. When you're out in nature, wherever you are, it doesn't matter. You've just done the Great Ocean Road, is that right?
I did, Macca. Margaret and I, with a couple of old university friends, walked along the Great Ocean Walk from Apollo Bay to the Twelve Apostles. And Margaret grew up in Victoria and spent a childhood camping around there, and so that's how the idea came. And oh, it's fantastic. It's an absolute treasure. And 6 days walking along the ocean, down on the beaches, over headlands, into the tall forests, koalas in the forests, tiger snakes around here and there, and the Southern Ocean smashing up onto the cliffs. of the Great Ocean Walk, and you can feel, you know, the power of the ocean just below you, and long walks along beaches, good firm sand. It was superb. And Parks Victoria have done a really good job, you know. There's quite a few people go there, but it's a one-way track. So you feel like you're there by yourself the whole way, which is very clever. And we did the posh version and went to a nice lodge at the end of the day, which was rather nice. Or you can camp if you want. Yeah, I'd recommend it to anyone who doesn't know that part of Australia. It's superb.
What is it about nature, do you think? You've stood on the top of Everest, and I mean, that must be an amazing sight. And K2, and yet you get right down to ground level and you're on the ocean road. And again, it's just awe-inspiring as well, I assume. It's just
It's those, you know, that feeling of being in a place where man doesn't dominate. Yeah, where humans don't dominate. The joy of that, the joy of changing your focus to... putting one foot in front of the other for a few hours, that's pretty satisfying, always. And, yeah, I guess the sense of humility, I reckon, that comes with that as well. We're just one little bit in a big system.
Especially in this day and age too, I think, you know. For me, who's always grown up with loving nature and animals and lizards and crap, it seems to be more important to me than ever, because people seem to be obsessed with their phones and technical things, and that, to me, is not good for the... for the brain.
I reckon you've nailed it, Macca, because as the world becomes more virtual, you know, wilderness and wild places become more important, I reckon. Contact with real nature becomes fundamentally more important. Can't overestimate its value.
Now, this walk along Great Ocean Road, is that like a wooden, like a thing, and then it goes down to the beach and then...
It's a trail, well-made trail, so it's good, easy walking, really. There's a bit of up and down, but not too much. There's a few boardwalks here and there when there's sand dunes, just to protect the dunes, where you go down onto beaches or up out of beaches. Real nicely done, yeah.
And I remember when I talked to you last time, it was about Antarctica, you were going down there. Yeah. And then another time I spoke to you and you were attacked in New Guinea.
Yeah.
It's a wild old world, isn't it, really, you live in? You inhabit?
Well, there's a lot of good places to go. We've only got a few years left, so I'm going to enjoy them as much as I can.
Yeah, you think about that, don't you? You think about that often. You think, what am I doing here? And a lady writes to me and she says to me, Ian, enjoy every day. And I think, God, how do I do that?
Go out in the bush.
Exactly, yeah. Pat a lizard or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you got any trips planned, Greg?
I'm going to have a couple of nice months at home and at our little farm. And
you still got your chooks? And
yeah, still got our sheep and got our chooks and got our dog. And yeah, and so that'll be a joy.
Well, nice to see you again, Greg.
Yeah,
good
you
on
too,
you.
Maka.
Thank you.
Thanks for your good work.
This is the All Over News and an interesting take on the Brumbies in the Kosciuszko National Park. And apparently South Australia's Department of Environment and Natural Resources was charged with removing the ponies from Coffin Bay National Park as an alternative to killing them. The Coffin Bay ponies, which are unique to Australia, were completely removed from the park to a neighbouring parcel of land by 2004 with the help of state funding. Now, once a year, the ponies are mustered and vet-checked, and some are auctioned. None are slaughtered. And from Trevor Shiel, he says, once again, we're talking about the feral animal problem. I'm amazed that their reproductive behaviour and the hormones involved are not being used to aggregate them, that is, to muster them, for control. Some Middle Eastern countries use this with camel control and has been used here for fruit fly control for years, but not with feral animals. I've seen several huge mobs of camels gathered in response to the urge to mate. I've been knocked over by a frenzied billy goat and a boar, and 50 years ago we had a friend who made a lot of money from fox skins by using a vixen in season as a bait. We've all heard howling dingoes and know why. Why are we so slow to use science rather than helicopters? Says Trevor Shiel in Alice Springs. As I've said before, the nice thing about coming to the Royal Easter Show at Sydney is that I don't have to go all over to meet people. People from all over come to the show. I'm with Richard House. How are you, Richard?
I'm very good, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good. You're from?
WA boy. Little place called Noangra, about 400 km.
Which means?
Well, a place of underground water. The ups, that's what it means. But yeah, about 400 k's southeast of Perth.
And you're at the show, why?
I've been asked to judge the medium and strong wool merinos. So my wife and I have flown over and love it, catching up with everyone.
And tell me about you and wool. When did that start?
Well, I'm myself a fourth generation farmer in Noengrup. Wool's been, and the sheep stud's been, a very big part of our life for generations. I've got two boys just come home, and they're very keen on it as well. So yeah, it's in the blood.
If any agricultural pursuit is up and down, wool is, isn't it? It's you've got to ride the wave.
Yeah, you got to have a big heart, I think. But you know, it's a game you don't just get in and out of quickly. We've got a sheep stud, so we're heavily invested, and we grow a lot of grain as well, as most West Australians do. But yeah, it fits for what we do, and yeah, we love it.
You like coming over all the way over to the east to judge? That must be good. You meet lots of people, and
yeah, we come over. We sometimes bring sheep to Bendigo as well, so we like to head this way and see what all our friends are doing in the sheep game, and sometimes pinch a few of their genetics to take home and get ours better.
I suspect in the judging game, like anywhere, it's like the beautiful baby competition. A lot of discussion after the event. I mean, you're in the gun, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you hope.
I know it's not subjective, but it is in a sort of way, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You hope the discussion's positive after you put someone second, third, or fourth. So, but generally, no, everyone's understands the system and it works well. You know, we're on the other side with the sheep in the show ring sometimes, so you know if you have a bit of luck and you come first and you make the most of it. But you know, it's all about everyone being participating and supporting each other, and you know, we're here for the big picture, and that's the merino industry, so yeah, it's what we do.
It reflects life, really, doesn't it?
It does, totally.
So how's things in Noengrup?
Yeah, we're pretty dry, actually. The west is very dry, except when you get out to the Nullarbor where they've just had a few floods. But yeah, the west is hanging out for a good rain to start the season off.
So. Oh, gee, I've looked at the weather. It's been hot over there, by God.
Oh, yeah, well, I've been home since 80, and I reckon it's the hottest summer. And, we don't normally, where we are, get too many 40 degrees, but, you know, we've had 5 or 6 days in a row, which, you know, we're reasonably resilient, but we're thinking of buying an air conditioner.
Well, look, good luck with the judging, and I hope there's not too much angst, but great to meet you, Richard.
Very good. Thanks, Macca.
Good on you.
Hello there. How you going? I wasn't going to say that because I heard you're already good. Somebody else told you. Anyhow, this is Lucky Doug here over in Western Australia.
Yes, Lucky Doug. How can I help you?
Well, I was just listening to you, and I remembered I should have been at the Rawlina Muster today.
Mm-hmm.
After the camp, but it was cancelled because of all the floods out on the Nullarbor.
Uh-huh. And you've been to that before? That sounds like a great time. They're all in them. Did we get a call from that once? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I was there in the phone box with my son-in-law, Chris. He called. We walked over about a kilometre from the camp near the station. There was a public phone box there. We got up 3 o'clock in the morning.
Greater love hath no man, Dougie.
We walked over there.
I wonder if the phone box is still there, Doug. It would be, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure if it's working, though. I'm...
Well, that's no good. Ring Telstra at once. Oh, no, the phone's not working. So you're from Rockingham, Doug, is that right?
Yeah, I'm Lucky Doug, from Rockingham.
So how many people do they get at the Royal Inn a muster when it's happening?
Oh, I don't know. It's getting bigger. There's a lot of people there. The police come from Euclid. One time there was two police. They run the clay pigeon shooting.
Right.
I said to them,
how many
police they got in Euclid? And they said six. I said, geez, that must be a bad town. There's only two people live there.
Yeah. Oh, so it's been cancelled because of floodwaters?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago or something there was a big flood out there. But soon I never went to Rawlina. I'm out on my trailer sailor. I've been out since last Wednesday, just cruising around near Rockingham and Garden Island and that.
And yeah, what do you do on that? Just do a bit of fishing or something, Doug, do you, or what?
No, I sail. I'm by myself. It's only a small one, 18 foot long. But when I'm sailing, I've got to do everything myself, and there's no time for fishing.
No time for fishing.
No, when I get camped up, I or anchor or pick up a mooring, I having something to eat, or I'm too knackered, I lay down. Yeah.
And what attracts you to the Royal Inner Muster? Why did you go there, Dougie?
Oh, it's a nice drive out there. We try to go a different way every time. I've been about five times since, I think that was nearly the first time we went, we called you up.
And what do they do? Tell people around Australia who are listening with bated breath, what do they do at the Royal Inner Muster?
It's about horse riding.
Horse sports.
A lot of Kalgoorlie Pony Club comes there. Mm. There's a rodeo now. I think it's bull riding and horse riding.
Wow. All right.
There's clay pigeon shooting.
I get the drift.
They're going to have all funny Iron Man contests, running along and pick up a old wooden railway sleeper and then carry it back and chop it in half with an axe.
Sounds like fun, Dougie. Well, enjoy your trailer sailor, and maybe next year we could all get to the Royal Inner Muster. But everything depends on the weather, doesn't it, in Australia?
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, thanks for talking to me.
That's a pleasure, Doug.
It's Kevin here, Macca.
Hi, Kevin.
From Lismore.
Yeah.
About 70 years ago today, I flew from Sydney up to Nyngan to play football with the team up there. The coach was Jack Holland. You'd remember him, I think.
Sort of. Not really, but anyway,
Dutchie
go on.
Holland.
Mm. Oh, Dutchie Holland. I remember the name. I didn't know him.
Yeah, well, anyway, the chances of something happening like this are just amazing. My grandson was up there working, and he came into the Woolpackers Museum, I think it's called, and he came across this photo taken of the 1954 Nyngan Rugby League side.
Uh-huh.
And he sent it down to me by his iPhone and brought back so many memories of I can't get over the odds of something like this happening. Nyngan is a fairly small town, as you would know.
Are they the Tigers, the Nyngan Tigers? Is that?
No, well, Bogan Terriers, we were called, was at Group 15.
All right.
In those days.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a blast from the past. So even though, you live a long time, something comes into your life that you completely blinds you, comes in from left field. And I just couldn't get out of this because it's 70 years, so I say. Flew up to Nyngan with Butler Airways.
Butler Air Transport, yep.
Yep, and I stayed at the Nyngan Hotel. My wife and I, and we played football up there, and Dutchie was the coach. He was a former international.
Yes, exactly.
And
yep.
He played several games with St George and first grade.
And Easts.
I played with Easts later on when I came back from Sydney.
There you go.
In those days, you had to have residential qualification to play for your side.
What's your last name, Kevin?
Wilson.
Kevin Wilson. Now, Kevin, so you'd be a fair age, Kev, would you?
I'm 90, just turned 97.
I thought so. If you're up there with your wife 70 years ago, I thought, well, this bloke must be. I'm thinking here while I'm talking to you. I think, well, this bloke must be at least.
Well, my birthday is the 1st of April, would you believe? And I just had a birthday and I flew up to Nyngan 70 years ago. And it just, I can't get over it, but something could. That far back in your past could come to light.
And your picture's there in the museum thing up there.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go. And you My didn't know that.
My grandson came across it, so the chances of winning that are probably greater than winning a lotto or something. But anyway, it's there, and it just gave me such a buzz at my time of life.
Yeah, good on you, Kev. Maybe you should get up to Nyngan and have a look.
Well, I was back there in about 15 years ago myself, but I never went to the museum in it. But this photo I didn't know existed and came down, and there's this.
There you go.
All the players and that at the time here.
Where are you, Kevin, now?
I'm at Lismore Heights.
Oh, right, away from the floods.
We're starting to rain again, by the way.
Oh, God. At least you're up in the heights away from the floods, if it floods. Yeah. Good on you, Kevin. Great to talk to you, mate. Congratulations. Bye-bye. Thanks, mate. Barbara's in Bathurst. Morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Ian. How are you today?
Yeah, well, thank you.
That's good. I just rang to tell you the water's lapping the Edgell Bridge on the Macquarie River here in Bathurst.
Wow.
Yeah, the road's closed.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And we've had quite a lot of rain. It's been good. My garden sucked it up like a milkshake.
Of course, you'd been dry before that, had you?
Yeah, we have been, yeah. But, you know, while I've been listening to you this morning, you were talking to that man about Cobb and Co. coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the house that John Ford built, and John Ford had the coaches in Bathurst before Cobb and Co.
Oh, really? John Ford?
Yeah, and it was his coach that was held up at Yagara, not a Cobb and Co. coach.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Historic.
So it's an old house. If you've been to the Flagstaff, you've seen my house, because if you're standing on the Flagstaff here, you look down towards the bridge, my house stands out like a thumb. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to see the Macquarie River lapping the bridge, I suppose.
Yeah, it'll come over it before the day's out, I'd say before lunchtime.
Uh-huh. So the road's closed, is it?
Yeah, the road's closed, yep. But thank you for Australia all over. I've been all over Australia like you, Ian, but mostly with you. But I have been over it a bit myself. It's great.
We'll have to come to Bathurst and do an outside broadcast, Barbara. I don't know if you
Look, the steps of the Flagstaff would be a wonderful place to do an outside broadcast from.
Uh-huh. All right.
Down there in the park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
it'd be lovely. And now that I've told you where my house is, if you're in Bathurst, come in for a cuppa.
Cuppa. Or I'll...
I don't know whether I'll have a scone going at the time.
Okay.
I'm an old lady, so I don't always get to cooking like I used to.
I'll ring you on approach, okay?
Okay, mate. You're more than welcome.
Good on you, Barbara. Good.
Have a great day. God
See
bless.
You. Bye.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. How you going? It's Craig.
G'day, Craig.
How are you, mate? We're over here in Laos, just listening to you on the radio. Managed to be able to stream you live, which is great.
And where are you in Laos?
Yeah, mate, we're a group of us every couple of years. We go motorcycle riding, and we're currently at Nam Gadang Dam. So there's a few of us here from Sydney and the mid-north coast.
Mm.
Danny Macca, I'm from Wollongong. How you going, mate?
Good, thank you. And
this place has changed considerably in the last few years. What we've been told, this place is being mined. This is a little rant. The roads are terrible over here.
It's hot too, Macca. Like, basically, where we travel, we've done about 1,000 kilometres at the moment. Started off in Thailand, made our way up from Paxi, and then every couple of days we'll stop, but Jesus, hot. It's been about 38 degrees, dusty, roads are shocking, but we managed to, we're now at this dam, and we've got to listen to Macca, you know, long-time listeners, so we thought we'll get on the radio and say g'day.
So tell me this, you're a group of motorcycle riders, how many?
There's 7 of us here currently. It's 6 o'clock in the morning here, so a few of us are still sleeping. We've got a rest day, so a few of us are sleeping still. But,
and
we go every 2 years.
You go every 2 years to Laos, do you?
No, mate. We've been to Cambodia, Vietnam. We've done Thailand twice. I've done the Himalayas. So we sort of get together every couple of years when our partners let us go, and then we all meet up overseas and then jump on some bikes and off we go.
When you say you jump on some bikes, they're not your bikes. You hire them, do you?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, that's right. We get them overseas. So we sort of go with a tour. At the moment, we're with a company called ADV. So they set up they give us a local guide and, off we go and some bikes. And we go for a few weeks, mate.
So you're in Laos. Is this the first time you've been in Laos?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, what an eye opener. Apparently, like they reckon 10 years ago, this place was beautiful, but at the moment, it's just sort of everyone's just taking advantage of it. As Danny was saying, like they're deforesting the place, they're mining the place. You know, nothing's getting put back into the local villages and country. It's pretty sad to see, actually.
So, Mark, if I can interlude for just 1 second.
Yep.
So I don't know where the mining money's going, because a lot of mining around here.
Mm.
Copper, gold, aluminium, some precious metals that It's all fenced off, which is great, like, you know, good for the country. But it's not going back in the roads, that's for sure. And the local villagers, they complain a lot. They complain a lot. They go, they ask why aren't the roads getting done, and, you know, they're not just getting done. We're talking about, like, a lot of red dust here. When big semi-trailers go over dusty roads over and over again all day, it creates a big dust plume, and the locals are really upset.
Yeah, well, it's probably it's a common story, but you you hear it from all over the world in lots of ways and at various times, don't you?
Yeah, mate, yeah.
We should be thankful to live in Australia. We are so lucky.
Yeah, mate, it's definitely an eye-opener for us, like travelling around the world, and especially on two worlds, you get to see, you know. Yeah, it's great to see, you know, other places, but you do have an appreciation for home, you know.
How long's your tour for, Craig? How long will you be cycling or motorcycling around Laos?
Yeah, we've got another week, mate. So, but yeah, we're pretty banged up. Had a few accidents at the moment. Like every tour, we sort of someone hurts themselves. But
is this because of the roads and stuff?
Yeah, mate, the roads. Like, you know, we've been going through jungles and stuff. So that's always you know, a bit of a challenge, you know, and then. It's 38 to 40 degrees every day, and we're in full motorcycle gear, so you can imagine fatigue sets in pretty quickly, you know. So I had 100% humidity, you know, and you run out of water and all those sort of crazy things. But, you know, it's fun, mate. We keep backing up every couple of years, so we must love it.
Well, yeah, it's great. I'm glad I'm not with you, Craig, but yeah, that sounds like...
Oh, mate, we listen to you whenever we can. Can, mate, we tried to call you when we were in Vietnam a few years ago, but we couldn't get through. We managed to get through in Laos, so that's great.
Yeah, so what's the capital of Laos?
Vientiane.
Vientiane.
That's where we're going to end up.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, then you fly home, do you?
Yeah, a few of the boys, their wives are meeting in Thailand, so they're going to have some R&R with the families. For myself, yeah, I'll be going straight back to Nambucca, mate, so where I'm from.
What do you do, Craig?
Ready to go. I work for National Parks, mate.
All right.
Yeah, up the mid-north coast. So, yeah, I just sort of, out there.
Do they have many national parks in Laos?
I guess you could call it that. I think everything, like where we are at the moment, we're looking at this big dam, and there's a national park across the gorge, you could say, that we're probably going to have a look at today. But, yeah, it's still, mate, they're very early in their sort of setting up that sort of infrastructure and preserving areas, you know, at the moment. I think, not to mention any countries, but we know which ones, pretty much taking advantage of most of Asia, you know what I mean? Mm. The poor countries and just sort of no money goes back into the local community, unfortunately.
Craig and the rest of your mates, good luck. Take it steady and... no more injuries, and we'll bump you sometime back in Oz.
Yeah, thanks, Macca.
Hey, Macca.
Yep.
You can't stop living because you're scared of dying.
No, exactly.
Say hello to everyone that was affected by the floods from us as well, mate. I hope everyone's safe.
Good on you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Macca.
Hello, Macca. This is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. What's happening?
How are you? I'm just driving home from a 800-kilometre trek with 66 awesome women on postie bikes with a bit of a sore behind.
All right. Now, where are you?
I'm actually pulled over on the side of the road at Wellington at the minute, but I just thought I'd call in. I'm following my husband, who's got a trailer packed to the brim with postie bikes and flags and all sorts of things hanging off it.
Well, what's the deal? What happened? Tell us the story.
Okay, so we are 66 women. We're riding for a charity called Wings for Kids, which is completely run by volunteers. Sorry, I'm losing my voice because I've been singing and laughing so much all week. It is to transport six children all around the areas that we've ridden. So we've been from Gulgong to Coonabarabran, Gilgandra, Coola, Dubbo, Mudgee, Colli Pub. We've been through water crossings, sandy dunes, up through forests. We've had such a blast and a laugh. And we had a final dinner last night at Mudgee, and excited to announce that we have raised $310,000.
Wow. So, Joanne, tell me, where do you round up the 66 women? Where do they come from?
Well, so there's women from, so I live at Boranall. We've got women from Orange, Dubbo, Wollongong, Albury, Cobar, lots of the ladies riding are grandparents of sick children that have been transported for medical appointments. We've got people from Tottenham, all around the area. Just and the word just passes, Macca, and you can't not support it. We, every town we stopped in, the organisers of Wings for Kids, who have done an extraordinarily fantastic job, and the supporters, they have families come and talk to us in every town, and the children talk to us. And I don't know, it's like it just keeps growing. Last year we had 38 riders, which was the inaugural ride, and this year we had 66, so the word just keeps spreading. And it is the most fun you can have on two wheels. It's just been amazing.
I just spoke to Craig in Laos with his mates, and they're motorcycling around.
I heard that.
And they've and a few of them have come to grief. Has yours been a safe ride on your postie bikes, or?
So we went through water, sand, water crossings that they closed the road 15 minutes after we went through. Unfortunately, one of our Orange team members, Lee, came a buster in some mud, and he's sitting up in Dubbo Hospital currently with about 9 fractured ribs in about 6 places.
So, dear.
She's in a world of pain, but we've had a couple of ankles, knees, head knocks. We've got doctors trip with us.
So where did you collect the postie bikes from? How do you get hold of...
We've all been on buying postie bikes left, right and centre all around the state, and we just, our amazing husband transport us to the drop-off point, drop us all off, we wave them goodbye and off we go, and they come back and pick us up.
So you hire these or buy the postie bikes?
No, we buy them.
How much does the postie bike cost you?
Well, I got mine pretty cheap. Mine was about $1,200, but they go for about $3,000.
Wow.
A lot of the women that ride, their husbands also ride in the men's ride, and it's been running for 10 years, and they pimp their rides. So they go fairly quickly. The boys like to race each other, whereas we like to have little stops and have coffee and, you know, take selfies and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of the women's husbands ride as well, which is, so it's become this amazing family of people that we're just connecting with.
And what do you call it again?
It's called Wings for Kids.
Wings for Kids. Well, good on you, Joanne. I think it's a lovely thing you do.
Thank you very much.
And, I think you go home and rest your bum.
I will. Thank you. Yes. And shout out to all the incredible children that we support. They're the reason why we're doing this. You know, that's the whole aim of the game.
Good on you, Joanne. Great to talk.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, g'day, Macca. This is Ross from up in, well, I'm from Townsville, but I'm actually in Claremont at the moment. I just wanted to give you a call to tell you how good the beautiful highlands of Queensland are looking. I've driven a lot, but it's just so spectacular at the moment. We've got a beautiful soaking wet season up here. It's still raining, actually, but yeah, it's just... I thought I'd give you a call. We're just getting going again to get home in time for the Cowboys to play.
Oh, right. They're playing today, are they?
Yeah, this afternoon at 4 o'clock they're on, and young Jakey Granville plays his, well, not young, but he plays his 200th game, sorry. But, yeah, I had a mate and I had to drop something. He's from Dubbo, and we thought, oh, well, let's meet up in Roma, and I dropped the van off to him. And, yeah, it sort of drove down over the last 2 days and back today.
What do you do, Ross?
Oh, I've got a little business up in Townsville. I actually weigh caravans and cars for compliance. All of those grey nomads and stuff. We weigh vehicles.
What do you mean? You weigh them where? How? What?
Oh, we've got like little mobile scales. So we people that are travelling, and I took my family around Australia a couple of years ago and just drove for 25,000 Ks. But when you buy all your cars and your vans and all that sort of stuff, you've got to make sure you're all compliant, like the trucking industry does it very well. And as we want to go on adventures, we should be complying to all of the rules as well. So, yeah, I started a little business here a couple of years ago doing that. And
you've got to have a certain weight, have you, with the caravan? And if you exceed what's the story?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's the caravan's got to weigh a certain amount. It's got a little compliance plate on it. And the car's got lots of compliance areas on it. And then you hook them up to each other and they've got more compliance areas. It's a little bit confusing, to be honest. And so there's sort of a group of us now. I think there's about, there's 20 of us in a group now. We're trying to create a national standard for it. But, yeah, it's just to help people out and keep them safe on the roads. Like, I mean, the drive I just did from Roma up, you know, the road gets a little bit wobbly, and if your weights are out and you're not set up properly, it can become pretty dangerous pretty quickly. So, you know, you want to go on an adventure of a lifetime. You want to be safe, and that's really what it's all about.
What, it's got to be heavy so it won't blow away, or it's got to be light so it won't ruin the roads. What's the story?
Well, yeah, I mean, if your car or your caravan ball weight's too heavy and your front tires get lifted off the ground, you probably see those dramatic ones when maybe not when you're driving to work in the busy cities in the morning, mate. But yeah, once you get out, they appear everywhere on our roads. So, but yeah, I was that's what I do for a living. But yeah, I just wanted to tell you how beautiful it was, the countryside up here at the moment. Like if you are sitting down in Melbourne and Sydney and it is getting cold, I'd be hooking that van up or your camper or whatever you're in and coming up and see it, because it's just unbelievable at the moment. So yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy the Cowboys are playing in Townsville today, are they?
Yeah. We've got them. We've got the Titans. So it's a bit of a Queensland derby, but so I've got my scratchies on with all my Gold Coast mates, but yeah, it's. It's the it's Jake Granville's. He still looks young and fit, but he's 33 or 34 now, which I guess is old for an NRL player. But yeah, he's playing his 200th game, I'm in Claremont and trying to get back to there. So 5.5 hours to do today, and then back again. But I'm definitely going to come back down here and have a bit of an adventure with my family. That's for sure, because it's just I don't know, like, well, you get phone calls from all over, I guess. That's why we love your show. But it's just the when we've had these soaking rain, wet seasons, it's just the countryside just, our forefathers, when they saw it, just must have gone, oh, this is it. And then we have 10 years of drought or something. But that's, yeah, when it's special, I think you got to get out and see it. So.
Well, a month or two ago, I spoke to an engineer friend of mine, and he said a couple of things. He said... he'd read some university research about they'd taken cores from a coral up in North Queensland, and it had said that back years and hundreds, thousands of years ago, it was really dry, and they could tell from samples they said, but he said that core sample was telling those researchers and my engineering friend that we haven't seen droughts like we're going to get. We haven't seen droughts in Australia, really. That's what he says, like of recent times. Back many years ago, there was. And then another bloke rings and he said, well, they took ice cores down in Antarctica and they found dust from Longreach. You know, this is down like a couple of thousand years. But he said the last 200 years, it seems, or 100 or 200 years, had seemed to be wetter than it had been, you know, in the years before. So the last couple of hundred years, I'm not sure if this is right, but when I think about where I live, it's, you know, it seems of recent times, I know we have droughts, but we also get flooding rains and continue to get flooding rains. But anyway, they're just, you know, who knows?
We just don't live long enough, Macca.
Really?
Yeah. Well, some people might say we live too long, but honestly, when you get into this stuff, when we went around Australia, I got young kids, right? And I wanted to show them the megafauna. And, you know, like we went to Western Australia and then we went to South Australia and we looked at all these things that used to walk around and, you know, they go, oh, this was recently here, and it was 30,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go, well, that's a fair while ago.
Yeah. But we're talking the universe is billions of years old, you know, and
it's hard, isn't it?
And that's an interesting thing. You said we just don't live long enough. Well, you'd have millions of people pushing, you know, perambulators around, you know, little, what do they call them, walkers. We'd all be on walkers. The streets would be full of people on walkers. Or they'd have to invent, perambulators for everyone to get on and walk around in them, Ross. I don't know. You're probably right. Yeah. But the world is getting older. That's why I just read that yesterday. We're getting very old all over the world. It's getting older, so we need young people, apparently. That's the story.
Yeah, right? Well, you've got to get out and enjoy it while you can, I say. Like, it's just, it's such a magnificent place. Like, I mean, yeah, we drove 25,000 Ks and I don't think we saw a quarter of it. It was just, like, all you know if you go is what you haven't seen. And I think you just got to keep going and looking at it because it's just this quick drive I've just done, you just get such an appreciation for it and you just got to keep going. I think anyway, I think it's just so beautiful. So.
Good on you, Ross. Great to talk to you, mate. Enjoy the footy.
I will, mate. I'll listen to you now for the next few hours as I'm heading up the through the Balliado Crossing and on to Tartus Towers and then on to sunny Townsville.
All right, yeah. Bit of pressure. All right, good on you, Ross. See
good
you, mate.
Good morning.
Bye. Susie's in Tenterfield. Morning, Susie.
Oh, good morning, Macca. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
That's good. I love your show. I listen every week.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ring and say that I'm on a road trip with my girlfriend. We flew down to Canberra on Tuesday, Wednesday rather, and picked up a beautiful 1965 SL230 Mercedes Sports. And so we stayed in Canberra that night and because it was quite nice weather. And we set off the next morning and on a Thelma and Louise. So where we stayed at Bathurst the next night and stayed right on the raceway. We got caught in the rain from then on. So, but yeah, we took off very early from Bathurst. We hoped to do the raceway track, but it was dark.
Right.
And the lights on the car weren't that great. So we took off from Bathurst and we got as far as Cooler, and that's when the rain started. So it's been steady since then, but the wipers work beautifully. The hard top's still sitting on her, and we've got a couple of little leaks, but we made it to Tamworth last night.
Well, that's what I said.
Night before.
Yeah, as soon as you get heavy rain, you'll find leaks that you never knew you had in your house or your car.
Yeah, that's what it's been like. So but she's a beautiful car,
why did you buy a 65 Merc convertible? You just wanted one, or it was a bargain, or what's the story?
It's over to Nikki now. I'll just let Nikki say a couple of words. Okay. G'day, Macca. No, it's just been the dream car.
Uh huh.
And finally, one came up, and I just thought, you know, life's too short.
I keep hearing
we're a little bit older than the car itself.
So where are you now?
We're in Tenterfield.
And you're heading to?
We're trying to head to the Gold Coast, but we're a little bit worried about the leak, so we might be here for another day or so.
Is it raining up there?
Yeah, it has started to rain here, yes. Yesterday was good, actually, from Tamworth to Tenterfield. We managed to avoid the rain. We were lucky. That's kind of why we came the inland route.
Uh-huh.
It started raining fairly heavily last night. I'm not exactly sure what the forecast is today.
There you go. Well, that's a lovely thing to – yes, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. The old cars are the best. You drive around now and all the cars, they all look the same. They all come out of the same box. They all look like wheelie bins as far as I can see.
It's just all of these small details that are just so lovely, you know, like the little wiper knob that you just press in and the what else is there?
The lights, which is like a little...
The light switch, you kind of a couple of little turns. And
you've forgotten the leaks too, all of those little things that you just need.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about those. We did have to buy a car cover in Tamworth because there was no motels without undercover parking. So we kind of rushed to the Autobahn and managed to find a wet weather car cover, which was great.
Oh, well, now you've got, once you buy a car, I bought a car off my sister last year, cheapy, it's an old one. But yeah. As soon as I bought it, I had to do put this on, new tyres, new this, it cost me another. Yeah. So you'll have all those little wonderful expenses, Susie and
yes.
Thelma and Louise, I should call you, shouldn't I?
It really has been, Thelma and Louise. It's been so much fun. Yeah, it's been great. It's been great, Macca.
All right. Well, good on you. Good luck. And take it steady. And, yes, you look forward to another couple of months of finding all the things that are wrong with it now.
Exactly. Thanks, Macca. I love your show.
Good on you. Thanks for your call.
All right.
See you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now.
Jenny's in Eden. Morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Fabulous, mate, really.
Oh, that's great. That's great. We've got a lovely clearing morning here after a beautiful day of rain yesterday.
Why is it beautiful? Because you needed it, did you?
Oh, everyone needs a little bit of rain every now and then. yeah. Even if
it's, but there is a limit, Jenny. There is a limit. Yeah, anyway, go on.
We needed what we got.
Yeah.
Wave heights off our coastline. You in your report, you said 5 metre waves. Well, we've got wave riders all the way up the coast, and yesterday they were reading 8 metres, 8 metre swells off the south coast yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was that East Australian current that brings that warm water. If you had a look at the sea surface temperatures yesterday. Mm-hmm. The shape of the sea surface temperature chart was the same as the rain chart coming down, the radar rain coming down the coast. So that warm water off the coast's got a lot to do with this rain that comes ashore.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah, you know, when you think the ocean's nice and warm and that air's coming in onto the land, that's what's causing a lot of that rain, I think. I'm not a meteorologist, but it was pretty graphic there yesterday.
Well, meteorologists said that we were going to have a drier than normal spring and summer, and and it was going to be drought, and El Nino has come back. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel sorry for them.
I do too. but maybe they just should, you know, ride it out and say, we'll see what happens. Because it's very, as my friend said, the weather is unpredictable and it has no memory. Meaning just because you get a flood this week doesn't mean you're not going to get another flood next week. You know, that's,
no, my word.
So it's
we're very happy for the rain we got yesterday, and it's cleared today, and arriving into port right as we speak is the Pacific Explorer. I think the last ship of the season for us, after 43 cruise ships this season in Eden.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, Jenny's in Eden on the south coast of New South Wales, and you can find that on your maps. Big, huge, it's a big bay, a harbour, whatever you call it, but the cruise
ship. Twofold bay.
Yeah, the cruise ship, what did you say, 43 or 40?
43 we had for the season, wow. Much smaller next year, but I think it's an industry that works in biannual activity, but yeah, we had this is our last ship coming in today, so we've got the taste of Eden out at the beautiful Void Town.
Sounds lovely. I'll have to call in and see you, Jen, sometime.
Please do. We're just shifting the skeleton of old Tom in the museum. We've got a big extension built, and in the next month or so, we're going to reconfigure his skeleton, so you'll have to come and have a look.
Good on you, Jenny. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.